I developed this thing called the star concept. Okay? And there's no erase markers. Oh, yeah, there's. Okay, here's the star concept right here. If you think of yourself as a five-point star, okay, and this is the ground because I can never draw a star straight, okay? This is your head. This is your arm. This is your arm, your foot, and your foot. And if you think of that, just think of yourself like this. Can you see if I drew a line right here? That'd be a star, the star concept. This is a really easy way to think of your life and get yourself organized. Let's see, where are we on our outline here? Philippians 2:15. Do everything without complaining or arguing so that you may become blameless and pure children of God without fault in a crooked and depraved generation in which you shall, what?
Shine
like stars. And you're thinking, that's the last thing I want to do, be a star and single parent.
Can I make a comment?
From a book called God's Design for Broken Lives. I don't know if anybody's read this. Barbara Dykus there in, I think they're in Assembly of God in Florida. Anyway, she says, goals are specific means of getting you where you want to go. They become your roadmap for the future. They bring out the past, remove the mire of the present, and make you a future reality. So I've done a lot of study about goals in the business world, and I've taught Franklin Covey what matters most to help people organize themselves in administration areas. And so I thought, well, we just need to bring this into our homes. When you set goals, there's things to remember. First of all, decide on 2 or 3 goals in each area. And be thinking, because I'm going to have us do a couple of goals today. You write down each goal. When you write it down, you're making a commitment then. You're putting it in your brain. You're writing it down. Write goals and desired results and make them measurable. In other words, don't say, I'm going to lose weight. I'm going to lose 30 pounds in a month. Because you won't lose the weight. You've got to write it down. You've got to have it measurable. And you've got to have specific goals. Be specific. How are you going to lose the 30? I'm going to start an exercise program. Next week. I'm going to start an exercise program a month later. I'm going to start an exercise program. Yeah. A year later. Ah, I wish I'd started the exercise. Some people even go out and buy the equipment and still it sits there. So you have to set your goals. So what we're going to talk about today is setting goals for your life. And you'll see I've lined it out. First of all, the top is your head. You want to set goals for your mental capacity, goals for single life, and now hear this out, goals for a married life. Why would, if you're single, or if you've never been married, why would you want to set goals for a married life?
It's a future, goal.
Do what now?
It's a future goal.
It's a future goal.
What you're planning for.
We hope.
You need to be happy being single first before you can be happy being married.
And if you were married before, you might know exactly what you don't want. I looked at her paper because there's a star on the last page you all can look at too as we do this. I don't know if you... Yeah, there it is. Okay. So you know, I noticed all of you are drawing stars, so you don't have to draw stars. So think of things in your married life. Evidently, there was something that didn't come together or you'd still be married. I mean, I didn't want my divorce, but, you know, in the United States anymore, it doesn't make any difference if you don't want a divorce. Somebody can get a divorce without you. But when I look back, there were mistakes that I made. We all make mistakes. So think about what it is that you want in a mate and write those things down. I'll give you an idea. One of the things I wanted in a mate was somebody that didn't smoke. That's real important to me. And so then as people came across my life, you write these goals down, what you want. And it, not unobtainable things like, yeah, I'd like to have somebody that had money, but I didn't pretend I wanted to write a, you know, marry a millionaire. So somebody to help me pay the bills. And then you just put them aside. Then several years later, when you begin to date, you pull that list out and you look at it. Because when you meet somebody and you get all caught up in that infatuation, you don't always think logically. So you pull those goals back out and you look at them. And my first goal was they had to be a Christian and love the Lord. My husband was a Christian and loved the Lord, but he pulled away from the Lord. The second one was they had to have a walk of faith and really be active, really want to be active in a church and support what I do for a living. Just not a lot of people that can support a wife who travels all the time. I remarried 4 years ago, and my husband is so wonderful. He supports everything I do, and I'm gone a lot. And he takes care of the house and the yard so I can go out and travel. He so much believes in what the Lord has in store for me to do with children that we'd only been married 2 weeks when we got a call from Steve Grisman, North Carolina, to come and move to North Carolina from Oklahoma to write DC4K Divorce Care for Kids. And the first thing I did was ask my husband. He said, I so much believe in what the Lord has in store for you. I'll quit my job. I'll move. The Lord will provide another job for me. Wow. That's what I wanted in a spouse. So write down what you want in a married life. If you have children, it's particularly important how you want. Think about what kind of parent you are and the parenting skills that you have. What kind of spouse do you want to be the stepmother for your son? Those are important things to think about. Do it now before you become involved with somebody so you can look at it logically. So mental goals, those are goals like... goals like maybe bettering yourself, maybe taking a college class, maybe doing something online, maybe taking a Bible study. I took a Bible study on marriage after I was divorced. It was Kay Arthur's In and Out series, and it was on, Covenant Marriage. Because I want to know what I did wrong, you guys. I didn't want to make those mistakes again. So that helped me mentally to move forward. I cried through the whole thing. And the married people understood. And they encouraged me. And that really helped me get things focused in my mind instead of concentrating what I happened, how I did want to do it. So just very quickly, think of a mental goal. If you want to share it, that'll be good. For your head, it's a mental goal, a goal for your single life, a married life, and... see how I put the word recreation really is recreation? That becomes part of your mental goal, recreation. What do you do for recreation? Somebody share with me.
Sleep.
Sleep.
I do a little bit of everything. I love boating. I've got a big boat. I just do a lot of handyman stuff, I guess. I like to do a lot of carpenter stuff, just big stuff.
And that's relaxing to you to do that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I play drums. I play drums in my church, so that's real relaxing.
What do you do for recreation?
Sleep. Because one of the things that I have is my mother, and she has Alzheimer's, so
my mother
too. Social worker, and 8-10 hours there, go home, have mom, and so downtime is sleep time.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to encourage you, too, to think of another way to relax, too, besides sleep. Sleep is relaxing, but you need ways to just refresh your body and your mind.
I was going to make a comment there. After my divorce, because of finances and stuff, I learned how to enjoy simple pleasures. Like, every night before bed, I have a hot cup of chocolate.
Yay! Good for you!
On a bad day, I add mini marshmallows. Really get a lot of enjoyment out of that, where before it was just a cup of coffee, mm-hmm. But now it's like my time.
That's your time. Good for you.
Sometimes simple pleasures.
Okay.
And small.
So you can start having a hot chocolate, didn't you?
My doctor said I needed to work in some exercise. And it's just like, my days are crowded. He says, I know, and the reason that you're not sleeping is because your days are crowded.
Exactly.
So one of my recreational goals is to build somewhere in my day some exercise.
Okay, we're going to talk about that. I'll get to that in a little bit. So hold that thought about the exercise. What else can you do for your own mental health in your head? What are some things you can do for him?
Look at other people instead of yourself.
Oh, that's a good one. Look at other people. So write these goals down. Whatever you think of, write them down. What about you? Something that you want to improve up here in your head. Put you on the spot, didn't
really? I tell you what. Probably time management. I mean, just to manage me my time. Because right now I'm a manager for Walmart, and I'm just constantly just running back and forth. I mean, they're preaching time management.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like sometimes I get my job involved more than I do my personal life. And it's very hard sometimes to keep the both of them separated. But I'm trying to do better at that.
Okay.
Especially since I went through the divorce and everything, I only had to go through that.
So you got to get your personal life organized so you'll be a better parent to your son.
Right.
Right. And to yourself, too. This is really funny. One friend I had, she created a trashy novel night That was one of her goals for it. She was a school teacher, an English teacher, and she had to read a lot of English novels, and she that was what she did all the time. So one night a month, she would go to Walmart or to Barnes & Noble, and she would just buy a book that had nothing to do with literature or history or anything like that, just a book, a storybook. A love story or something. To her, that was trashy novel night. She didn't really go by trashy novels, but she called it her trashy novel night. And she would buy a paperback book, and she would, that whole weekend, on Friday night, starting Friday night, she would read that. That's what she did one weekend. She picked a weekend, her kids weren't there. And I thought, well, and she said, I look forward to that. That is a form of recreation for me, because I teach literature all the time, and so pulling back and just laughing and enjoying something. After she told me that, I chose to look at some of Barbara Johnson's books. Stick a Geranium in Your Hat is one of the funniest books. There's a lot of neat Christian comedians. So you might look at picking up one of those books at Lifeway or Barnes & Noble or something like that, and just and using that as a form of relaxation. I have a guest room now, and I have those books up there in that room so people can just relax and read short stories. And Christian, what is that? Oh, gosh, it just slipped my mind. The little short stories you read in a book, I can't even think what they're called now. I'll think of it tomorrow whenever I'm driving down the street. So another mom I knew, she went to the discount store and would buy the movie place. And at that time, she bought movies that were on sale, like Walmart or one of the places you go check out movies. Now you could buy a DVD, but she didn't have money, so she would buy the old ones on sale. Now I also have a single mom now. She goes online, and she's found this really neat Overstock.com or something like that, where she orders things online and for her self-enjoyment and things like that. So it's okay to enjoy yourself. You're a single parent. It's okay. You're a single person. It's okay. So that's your head. I got to quickly move on. So then we have our arms standing out here. You can think of these arms as one arm is your arm of family and one arm is your arm of friendship. Now here's what happens. If all you do is deal with your family, Kim, Cricket, if all you do is deal with your family, exactly, you're going to be a lopsided star. But if all you do is go out and party and have a good time with your friends, even church friends, and you're ignoring your children, this is what happens. So we have to figure out a balance here. And I think family needs to, you need to think about extended family on that. So look at the arm of family. What are some things you can do for the arm of family? Well, set goals. You might want to set goals to do something with your own family. One of my goals when I did this was to have a family reunion of my family. And I lived like 80 miles from the majority of my family in Oklahoma. And when I was growing up, we had family reunions after I became adult. Excuse me, nobody had family reunions. So I started in March planning a family reunion for Labor Day weekend. And my aunt and uncle from California found out, and they decided to come in. I had an aunt from New Jersey, came into Oklahoma, and we planned, and we had this big family reunion at my house. I couldn't afford anything, but they brought all the food, and it was really, I got so excited. I spent weeks cleaning up my house and doing the yard and putting flowers out and everything. It was a big event to me and my children. That was years ago. That was probably almost 20 years ago. Recently, I was in Oklahoma for something, and my cousin passed away. He was the same age as I am. He has children, and they were just little children. And they came and they go, oh, when are you going to have another family reunion? That was the only one we had in years, 20 years ago. It was a way for me to connect with all those little nieces and nephews and great second and third cousins and all those things to connect. So think of something for your family. Now, here's something else that you might not want to consider, but you are your children's parent. There's another parent with another side of the family. Think of some way you can encourage your children in that other extended family relationship. And that may be hard for some of you. And some, it may come naturally. Some of you may already be doing it. But to this day, I am still friends with my children's grandparents on the other side. And whenever the grandfather passed away, I mourned because they were really good friends for me. And when I was in Oklahoma last Mother's Day, we, all the kids and I, packed up grandkids and we went to see their other grandmother. And she was so delighted that we did. So how are you going to promote that extended family? And that will be important for you to remember as a single person, to help encourage the other parent, because in divorce, people really get picky and things start to hurt and things are said and things get out of proportion. But you know what? That's a part of your children's heritage. They have a right to know about that family and that heritage. Do your children get to see their other grandparents?
Yes. Unfortunately, my divorce was because my husband got addicted to his prescribed pain medicine.
Oh, yes.
So my in-laws have, or some people call them ex-laws, but my in-laws have been very supportive and were very close.
Good. Very good. And you? Does your son see
his other? I get out on the weekend, my little boy on the weekend, because of where that I live, about 30 minutes from his school, so he stays up that way, which I'm hoping to overcome that here in the next couple months, move up that way. But he sees him about every day.
Okay.
And then my mom gets the opportunity once or twice a week to go pick him up from
school.
Good.
So he has access to both.
Right.
That's really great. In divorce care for kids, that's a program for churches to use with children going through divorce. And that's one thing I tell all my leaders. We have about 2,000 churches now have DC4K, is you need a family-type environment for these children, and you need older people, because many children do not have access to their grandparents. And grandparents are a safe place to fall. You know, they're just a safe place for the children to have. So, family. What are you going to do for your family? What about your own children? What kind of goals are you going to set to encourage your own single-parent family? What I did was, after several years, when the kids' schedule began changing, you'll probably find that with the 14- and 15-year-old. You think you have a schedule down, and chorus comes along, or band, or something, soccer, and things change. I started doing tea parties early in the morning. And I went, I got a little teapot, and my kids like spiced tea, and I got up like at 5 o'clock one morning and fixed a little tray, and I took it upstairs, and I said, Brian, you know, come with me, we're going to go have a tea party. And Julie Jimmy goes, Mom, it's dark, have you gone crazy, a tea party? I'm a boy, I'm not having a tea party. Yes, you are, son, follow me. So go into Julie's room, Julie, wake up, we're having a tea party. Mother, you've lost it this time, you've really lost it. And I go, no, just humor me, you have to memorize those words, just humor me, you use that a lot, just humor me. Julie, we're having a tea party. So I said, Brian, sit on Julie's bed. Julie set up, you know, and kind of ordered them what they're supposed to do. And they go, why are we doing this? It's dark outside. I said, you know what? We're not having a chance to connect. Julie, you have to go to band practice. Brian, you're in track. My job. I said, I don't want to lose our connections. We need to connect. So just every once in a while, we'll have a tea party. And so they, you know, here was my goal. It was going to be like, we're going to share our deepest thoughts. And you know what happened? Julie goes, oh, look, Brian, we've never been allowed to touch the china before. And she's like, you have to hold your hand out. Like, and they started laughing. And I thought, well, that's okay. We're still connecting. We're having a good time. We're laughing. So we just laughed and carried on, you know. So I said, anytime you want a tea party, just tell me that before, you know. And if something's coming up, we'll have a tea party. Let's try to have it at least once a month. Well, what happened down through the years, Julie would say, Mom, I got a big band contest coming up tomorrow. Can we have a tea party? Or I got a big test, you know, and Brian's got a big, I've got a track meet. Mom, can we have a tea party? And we would, sometimes we would pray at the tea party. Sometimes we wouldn't. You know, it was just a chance for us to really connect. Well, as my kids got older, and when Julie was in high school, she found about a young man that was living in his car. So she said, Mom, can we invite this kid to come live with us? I was like, oh my goodness. Well, we can bring him here, and then we'll call DHS, because I was always taking in people. And she learned that, you know, that was just one of the gifts, way we ministered, was to bring people in, you know. And she always gave up her bedroom and slept with me when people came in, needed a place to stay. So I actually had taught her to want to help people. So we brought the young man to our house. We called DHS in Oklahoma. He was there a few nights, and then we got him settled in. Anyway, the night before he was going to leave, she said, Mom, can we have a tea party tomorrow? And I go, Julie, he's a 17-year-old strapping young man. I don't think he's going to have a tea party. She goes, Mother, this is important to me. I've done this for you. Mother, just humor me. And you know, she was right. She had done that for me. So I said, well, okay. And I was like so embarrassed to do this. So next morning, I got up and got the tea, and I went in his room, and I go, put a shirt on, sit up in your bed. We're having a tea party, you know. And he's like, what? So we had our little tea party, and he goes, why do y'all do this? And Julie goes, I don't know. We just started doing this a long time ago, and we just do it all the time. And so I thought, well, that'll probably just be the lowest point in that kid's life, you know. And so we go on about our business, and the people come to pick him up, and he gets in the car. He taps this guy on the shoulder, and he goes, "You know what she did? You know what she did for me?" I thought he was going to say, took him in, gave him food, whatever. "She had a tea party for me. Nobody's ever had a tea party for me before. 17-year-old kid who had a very dysfunctional family. And he's centering in on the fact that we had a tea party." So that was a way that we connected, my family and I. Now, as my children became adults, when Christmas came along, they sent me a teapot. I have teapots from all around the world. My daughter's in the Air Force now, so she's... I even have a teapot from Afghanistan and Kuwait, and I don't have one from Iraq yet, but I, everywhere. I finally had to say to my kids, "I don't have any more space for you to buy me teapots." But see, as adults, that was a way for them to connect with me, their mother. And my son-in-law is on this quest to find the ugliest teapot he can find and buy it for me. So it extended from my children to their spouses. For Christmas, my daughter-in-law got me a beautiful little teacup. She didn't get a teapot. She got me a teacup. So see, that little thing that I started 20 years ago is expanding. And guess what my grandson wants to do every time I go to England to see him? We have to have a tea party. Now it's expanded to my grandchildren. So what are you going to do to connect with your children? Write that down. Make that a goal. Set it in measurable results. Set dates and make it specific and do it. All right. Now what are you going to do for your friends? Got your family taken care of over here. You're connecting with your children. Connecting with your extended family. Your kids are connecting with their extended family. What are you going to do over here for yourself and your children? You need to have a friend. Any ideas?
Have a party.
Have a party?
They need friends too.
All right. Where are you going to bring the friends from for the party?
Divorce care. Single.
All right. Woohoo. Divorce care. All right. What about you?
I usually have like a big 4th of July party. Since we've done that for the last 5 years, I guess all family comes together, like a family reunion. My aunts and uncles, I call everybody over, and we usually do that. And then Zachary, I ask him if he wants to bring his friends over, and they all come over to me. We have a big party there, and that seems like it. They always look for that every year. They always call me. We're going to have a 4th of July party. Mm-hmm. What can I bring and stuff like that? So it's really good.
I'm going to encourage you to, and you might make a note of this, to find an old friend that used to be a friend a long time ago to reconnect with. A high school buddy, somebody from your childhood, and make a reconnection there. And it's great. Email now. Just email it periodically. I'm going to encourage you to form at least 2 new friendships this next year in your church environment. Maybe a mentor, or maybe you mentor somebody, but some really deep friends. I don't think God wants us to exist without brothers and sisters in Christ and those friendships. And down through the years, my friends have carried me. I remarried and my husband died of cancer. And when he was dying of cancer, I don't know how I would have survived without my friends and the Lord working through them. I mean, working in me too, but just on days that were just so almost unbearable. Every time the Lord sent somebody to me, some type of friend to bolster me, to lift me up, to help me move forward. So build your friendships. When Brian was in 5th grade, my daughter was in a parade, and he was spending the night at somebody's house, and he called me, and he goes, "Mom, I have a real problem." Well, we had to rush him to the hospital. He had some swelling, and they had to do an emergency surgery on him. But here my daughter's in the parade, and I'm at this hospital, and I don't know who to call, and I called friends from church, and they picked up the pieces for me. I had to have some help, and they picked up the pieces for me. And that night, well, I stayed all night in the hospital, but they took care of my daughter. They went and picked her up. They went and found her at the parade. Little town, they had to walk around and find her. And I went home the next morning. My refrigerator was stocked. My pantry was stocked. My house was cleaned up. My friends came to the rescue. And so you give your friends an opportunity to do what the Lord tells them to do by ministering to you. So don't rob your friends of the opportunity of ministering, but you've got to have those friends. So you have the arm of family, the arm of friendship. Right goals, what you're going to do. Then you have your feet. You stand on, ta-da, the foot of fitness. That'll be for you. And the finances. So write goals in these areas. And maybe your finances are fine, but you still need some goals for finances. So fitness, what would be a fitness goal? Let me tell you something. It's in your mind. It takes 21 days to form a habit. That's brain research. That's proven. 21 days. If you want to form a habit, you do the same thing every day at the same time for 21 days. So if you're going to write a goal to become healthier, think of whatever it is you want to do and then commit to doing that for 21 days. Write it down on a calendar. Write it down. Maybe it's walking 10 minutes a day. Now, when you write it down and then you do it and you check it off, that raises the serotonin level in your brain. It helps you to feel better about yourself. Did you know that? That's why it's important to write these things down. And when you accomplish it, check it off. It's all hooked to the brain and everything that's going on in the brain. So, somebody tell me what you're going to do for fitness. Did you know that breathing deep is a good fitness thing to learn, especially if you're under stress? You need to learn to breathe from the diaphragm, which is breathing right here. If you ever took music lessons, they taught you how to breathe right here. Because when you are under a lot of stress, you will breathe higher up in your chest. And little children in divorce breathe like this, or you'll find yourself at the end of the day, you're like... And you just need to pull that down, and you need to breathe from here. When you breathe from here, you send oxygenated blood into your brain, and that releases the chemicals. When you're under a lot of stress, there's a chemical called cortisol that floods your brain. It will literally kill blood, it will literally kill brain cells. You need cortisol when you're in an emergency situation and adrenaline to get you, you know, fight or flight, to get you out of that situation, to get you all calmed down, whatever just happens. But you also need to relax. And drinking copious amounts of water helps because it washes those through your system, but learning to breathe right here from the diaphragm. So you can, when you practice breathing, if you just interlace your fingers like this a little bit, and when you breathe, what you want, your goal is to make them push out a little bit. And then when you let it out, it's to come back in. Lay down on the floor. Just when you stand up, you'll still tend to raise your shoulders up like this. So lay down on the floor and really concentrate breathing right here. You'll be amazed at how much that will calm you down. We already know that cancer is related to stress, heart attacks and strokes are related to stress. Excuse me, I'm just waiting for the day about 20 years from now when they study all the single moms and they're having heart attacks and cancer, that they're going to find a lot of it stress related. So you, single mom cricket, you really need to figure out how to de-stress yourself. It's very important for your children. You want to be around to see those grandkids. And I'm all that person. Now, I'm really fast and I just go like this all the time, and I had to learn to really calm myself down. Courses help. Music helps. Soft choral music, you know, Christian music helps. But learn to breathe to release that stress. Drink a lot of water. Yeah, massages are great. You usually have to pay for a massage. But Single trip gave you a massage?
4 hours. I never would buy it for myself. It was wonderful.
Oh, how wonderful.
I felt like a noodle afterwards.
Yeah, but you were relaxed, weren't you?
Yes, and now I'm hooked.
Now you're hooked. Okay, well, set a goal. That'll be a financial goal, too, to save your money to get a massage. Which takes us to finances. What kind of goals are you going to set for your financial end of your life there? One thing I'm going to tell you, if you're a single parent, cut up those credit cards. Cut up those credit cards.
The main thing on the finances would be to pay your tithes first, whether you have the money or not, because if you pay that, it's a spiritual law, and God mm-hmm. will make a way that there's always money there somehow, some way.
Pay your tithes, so important. That is the Lord's money. And then also think of a way to give to other people. Maybe it's food, or maybe it's something that you make. But that you do that for God's glory, but God turns that around and helps you feel better about yourself too. I know all those. I remember when I first became single, one of the deacons in my church, the minister said something, and I was at the piano, and as soon as I could, I just went outside, and I was just standing out there weeping, and one of the deacons came up, and he said, "How can I help you?" And I said, "Just don't talk to me right now." And he shook his finger in my face. He said, "How dare you rob me of God's joy?" I was like, "What?" And he goes, "God has told me I'm supposed to help you, and I've tried, and you're robbing me of what God has for me to do, and so that means you're robbing me of God's joy." And I was just like, might as well slap me in the face, you know? But it was true. I was preventing him from doing what God told him to do, and I needed him to say that to me, so that I didn't rob him of what God wanted him to do. So look at your, and I mean, I had a lot of people. I was embarrassed to take financial help, but I had a lot of people maybe not give me money, but give me food. Or I know the first Christmas, they said, make a list of what your children's clothes size and what they like. And I had told them, could you get one gift for Christmas? That's it. Christmas morning, the tree was stocked with gifts that the church had brought in and put under the tree after the kids went to bed that night. I mean, they gave and they gave and they gave. And so they helped on my finances. But Cricket's right, pay your tithes, get rid of the credit cards. Larry Burkett has this thing called needs, wants, and desires. So, and we in DC4K, we work with the kids on a financial unit on is something you want, is something you have to have a need, a desire, or a want. And we're teaching the kids, and even parents will come back and they'll go, thanks a lot. We went to the grocery store last week and my son kept saying, is that a need or a want or a desire, Mom? Figure out which one it is. Because you can put your need, your desires off, but the things that you have to have for your life, that's what you need to get. So, my kids are incredible. My son-in-law said to me about 5 years ago, you raised this girl. You cannot believe our savings that we have. I've spent every penny, but she knows how to save. My son will graduate from med school in May. And he has worked his way through college and got grants from med school. But in high school, my kids had to contribute to the household. I couldn't to buy things for them. They had to help me. They both had to work outside the home. So how are you going to handle all those finances? Think of a way that you're going to stand on that leg of finance, because everything that you're doing right now, you're training your children for when they grow up. And how you handle your finances is how they're going to handle their finances, unless there's some intervention along the way. And also, on when you're thinking about the leg of, I want to go back because I forgot something in fitness. When you're thinking about fitness, think about how much TV and video and computer games and time your children spend on the computer, because that actually is fitness. And I'm sure you've read all the research and all the reports about how obese our children are in this day and age, and they're not getting physical exercise. Years ago, I limited my children. They got 5 electronic hours a week. That was it. They could either spend it watching TV or video games. I'm going to encourage you not to put a computer in their room. Computer needs to be where you can see it all the time. And I wouldn't even put computer games in their room. And if they played video games, I would want them out in the atmosphere. My husband had his grandson here a summer ago. He's 8 years old. And then last year we were in Oklahoma for Mother's Day, and he spent the weekend with us. And this kid spent the whole time on games. This child has no social skills at all. None. Not even the family. His whole life is directed to the games. Just read a research project about the violent children and it coming from the violent TV shows and video games. Do you know that children's cartoons and children's shows have more higher percentage of violence in them than adult shows do anymore? The cartoons have more violence. Think about that with your children. Limit them to how much time they're spending in those areas. And I know as a single mom, it's like, oh, but they're so quiet and they're not fighting when they're watching. But my children would have to get the TV guide and figure out what they wanted to watch. And we had one TV. And if Julie was watching a show and Brian came in and started watching it, that took it part of his time. So he had to think of something else to do, or to read a book or what it was. But he couldn't watch that show. My kids have tremendous, they're so organized now in their time management because they learned how to manage early on. So the last part of yourself, and the part that's very important in your star, is this part right here, your inner self. What kind of goals are you going to set for your inner self? And this is what I call your spiritual dimension. Somebody tell me what you want to, what is it that you want for your spiritual life and your inner self? And you maybe don't know quite how to obtain it, or maybe share that something you have wanted and you have obtained it and how you did that for yourself, your inner self.
Acceptance of whatever the Lord will have for my mom. I mean, as I talked to the pastor, and my brother is a minister, and so we go to churches with him, and everyone talks about how the Lord is going to heal mom, and I'm thinking that's wonderful, but that might not be his will. And so just being able to say, Lord, whatever you want.
Yeah.
And being okay with that. And that's always a struggle.
There's a really good book for you. It's called The 36-Hour Day. It's about Alzheimer's patients. I just read it. And the Lord provided that for me. I was in Houston, Dallas, Texas, doing a seminar, and I was going to go from Dallas to Oklahoma. And I knew my mom had Alzheimer's, but my brother wouldn't accept it, and she was living alone, and she was walking around at nighttime. She knew where she was a lot of times. And so when I got there, just happened to be the minister I worked under was an expert in Alzheimer's, and that's what he did. He worked with the senior adult population. He gave me that book. That'll help you a lot. But that, boy, you talk about a spiritual battle and a struggle. That Alzheimer's and dementia, and we have a lot of single moms caught in between. They've got a family to raise, and they've got parents that have dementia. Now they're being pulled in both directions. That sandwich generation. So, what about the rest of you? What do you want for your spiritual life, your inner self?
Well, I've been praying for several years that God would encourage me so that I could encourage others, and He's been faithful to His promise. And I have seen, especially through my divorce and through divorce care and the singles groups and missionettes, how just in little things that God will use you and you don't even realize you're being used.
Right.
So I have seen that, and that's a real big spiritual boost for me because I know God answered my prayer.
That's right. That's right. Good for you. And you're in divorce care?
I've been a facilitator for 3 years.
Oh, praise God.
I did the divorce care for kids one time.
Oh, we'll have to talk. We're finding phenomenal things happening in divorce care for kids. Just it's just incredible what the Lord's doing in that program. So, what about you?
I think as far as for me, I try to go through and just help different people. I like what you was talking about, not financially, but just like if they need something done on their home and stuff. And more or less, I'm trying to find out what God's will is for me for single.
Mm-hmm.
Because my divorce was just about 3 months ago. And, of course, the whole time I kept on thinking, because I didn't want the divorce, but it came through anyway. But there was a lot of things that I seen that, like you said, it's things that I had done and things that she did too, that things that we didn't correspond with. And, but that's my biggest thing right now is just trying to figure out what God's purpose. And I've got the purpose-driven life book, but I get up to the fifth chapter right there and I lay it down and I'm picking back up again. It's a hard book to go through. I'm trying to pick up and find the CDs, but they're hard to find.
Yeah, it's hard to go through that by yourself. So I encourage you to get some kind of mentor, somebody to go through that, a man that can go through that with you.
Okay.
Yeah. Always one of my goals, ongoing goal, when I was single was to get up and read scriptures every morning and just have some quiet time because my life is just so hectic. And for years I would get up and I would just like, I find myself sound asleep, you know. In the wintertime, we had a two-story house, and so I would sit on the vent, put a blanket around me, you know, and turn the heater on because I kept it real low at nighttime, you know, and the heat would come up and it would feel sore. And I'd go to sleep, and that bothered me for years that I would sleep. Many times my kids would get up and see me sound asleep, but they saw my Bible there, you know. But a friend of mine said to me one time, she said, you know, there's no better place to sleep than in God's arms. And you're a single mom, and He knows what your life is like, and you're making the effort. You're opening the Bible. You're reading. And what better place to be than resting in the arms of God? And that helped relieve me. I still needed to make the effort. And then as, you know, as my kids got older, then I could spend more time in the Word. And so maybe you just buy I do the Lifeway Journey. It's not very expensive, and it's for women. And I can't remember what the one for men, and Stand Firm, I think, is the one for men. It's just a little daily devotion thing. It's up to date. It's like modern, but it has all kinds of things just for women, older women, younger women. Just, and it has a scripture, a little short story, and then a little place on the bottom you can write your prayer request. So those are really good. I like those really well. A lot of churches will buy those.
I've got to my pastor. He wants us to read Proverbs every day because it goes every day. So every morning I get up to 6 o'clock and read that. And he gave me the journal book, or actually the book for every man every morning, or like every man's battle. But I read it every morning. And
good for you.
Read it. So it's pretty good on there.
And something else, in the scripture it says in Deuteronomy 11, 18-20, fix these words of mine in your hearts and minds. Tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them on your foreheads. Teach them to your children, talking about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road, when you lie down and when you get up. And I thought, when I read that, what does that mean? And I came to the conclusion that meant that I need to put scriptures all everywhere. And so I would have them on my mirror. I have them in my car, on my desk. And then it said to my children, I rely on the word of the Lord. I'm not really good at memorization. I play the piano, I don't even memorize that well, you know, but I have to have things in front of me all the time. So that worked for me. And also, did you know you can use your dry erase markers on your mirror and erase it real easy? So we made notes to each other, and I would write scriptures on the mirror and or draw a heart when I to the kids and put a scripture up there on the mirror, and just simple things like that that's just constantly pouring the word into their minds and their brains. Psalms 35, weeping may tarry for night, but joy comes in the morning. I think that's so true. Sometimes it seems like as single parents, we're just weeping, but if we just hang on and hold on, your joy will come. Your joy will come, and before you know it, your little kids are going to be all grown, and you're going to be where I am, and they're going to be all over the world, and you're going to have to track them down all over the world. I miss my children, but I am so honored that down through the years, God gave me wisdom when I didn't know it was wisdom. But I made a lot of mistakes. I made so many mistakes, but God covered those mistakes, and I have a good relationship with both of my children. They're wonderful, contributing adults in society today, my grandchildren love me because they force that. You know, every time I call my daughter, it's like, Gage Nona's on the phone. They get them really excited to talk. We have a 3-year-old grandson who probably doesn't remember what I look like, but he's so excited to talk to Nona on the phone all the time. He sings me songs on the phone. I haven't seen him in a year because he's in England. They're coming in about 3 weeks. But that says to me that the Lord gave me wisdom and He helped me raise those children. And you can do that too. So, shine like stars. I need all of you to stand. This is over with at 12, right?
I'm not sure.
Well, I think we're supposed to be over with. It's already past 12, so. So I want you to get plenty of space, and I want you to put your hands at your side like this, and then for the next 21 days, I want you to stand in front of your mirror every morning, and I want you to go like this. I am a star. Like this. Okay, we're going to practice it. Your right foot out, then your right arm, then your left arm, and you throw your head back. So, I am a star. Ready? I don't hear you. Do it again. I am a star. You are a star. And I want you to shine. I want you to read you one more scripture. He determines the number of stars, and He calls them each by name. There's no star in the sky that's alone. The sky is full of stars. God placed them there. And it's just like you said, He puts the light into the stars. He'll put the light into you. God made two great lights, Genesis 1:16, the greater light to govern the day and the lesser light to govern the night. He also made, and I'm not going to give you the answer to that, look in verse 17. God set the stars in the expanse of the sky to give light on the earth. What kind of star are you for your children? You're leading your children. You, what light you have, you will light them up. So be a star for your children. And teach them I am a star. So they can relax. So they can be feeling good about themselves too. And do it with your kids too. I am a star with your kids. Thank you.